curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Soans, and I'm here this morning with Ron Kitchens. How are you today, Ron?
I am awesome.
Great. Well, today, Ron, we are going to follow up on a conversation that we had a couple weeks ago about the talent shortage. That podcast received a lot of buzz, as you know, and it's an issue that's really impacting us. And we talked a lot about that on that recent podcast. However, one of the things that popped up in comments and just as we were talking to friends who had listened to the podcast was the concept of inboarding and what that means during the time of a talent shortage. Do you want to explain to the listening audience what you view inboarding to be?
So there's the old adage that, you know, one of my favorite old commercials is United Airlines commercial, and it comes from the 80s, I guess, and it's a dark kind of fuzzy room and a bunch of men and women standing around a conference table, very somber, and clearly the boss walks in and he said, you know, we just lost our best, oldest customer, and because they said he didn't know us anymore. And so he said, we're not going to let that happen. And he hands out plane tickets for United Airlines to all of the people around the table. And then they say, boss, where are you going? And they said, I'm going to go see that old customer. The same adage works for the talent in our own organizations. We tend to think, well, we have to go outside of the organization. And I'm a firm believer that you got to bring in outside folks to add some pizzazz sometimes, to bring new energy, new ideas. That I'm not condemning that at all. But just like that oldest customer, the people inside the organization are the ones that know best what's going on. And in a lot of cases, how to take the organization to the next level. They've just never had the power, the influence, the voice to do that in most organizations. So inboarding for me is about honoring our idea that everyone is the CEO of their own responsibilities. And as a CEO, you need the freedom to get exposed to a multiple, if not all, facets of the organization to find sometimes where your next place to bloom is. It may not be a big career change, but you may go, oh, I happen to actually enjoy that thing that nobody else seems to like. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot that, you know, there's four or five people on our team that are in senior leader positions that started out as either my assistant or the front desk. And it was, they were highly talented, amazing people. But when we got them in a position where they could learn all of the goings on, which you do as, you know, the front desk or on my team, get exposed to everything, all of a sudden they're designing their next job. And that's what great organizations look like. They're not built on a hierarchy of yesterday. They're built on people constantly redesigning for the greatness and demand of the marketplace today.
That's so true. And I think that just to add to that, there are so many opportunities that people have in their current job placement that you may not see on a resume or you may not be able to articulate in an interview. But once they're on board and you get to see them shine, you get to see where those strengths really lie and where they could where else they could fit in the organization. So I've really appreciated being a part of this culture where every time there is a job opening, the first question isn't what does the resume of that person look like? It's do we have somebody on the team that possesses strengths in this area that we could invest in further in order to fill that position? And if not, then we go find the right person and see where that takes us. But it's been an amazing journey.
Well, and I think, too, this idea that most people really don't know what they don't know. And not most people, all people don't know what they don't know. So it's this idea that by exposing people to those things and letting them ask questions, it's the exploration, but it's also the fresh eyes that challenge the status quo. And as you know, I hate the status quo. Status quo, I can make this up. I won't. But, you know, if I was making it up, I'd say, you know, it's from the Greek of stuck in one place. And so, you know, this idea that we got to bring new people in, it sometimes is critically important. but I'd sure rather accelerate people that are already on our team who we know the quality of their character. And in a lot of times we're doing that and there's no job. People design their next job and go, here's what this could be. I'll take these other things off of the plate of other people so they can do their thing even better. You know, our friend John Aitkoff quoted one time, and he may have posted it on social, but he said, you know, that thing that you do that seems easy and gives you energy, yeah, not so much for the rest of us. And that's what we have to do, is try to find where people are there, which doesn't mean that they're going to always be there, but they can be there today and make the organization that much stronger.
And just to put this issue into a little bit more perspective, there's been quite a few different studies out there that really talk about hiring and just the trends that we're seeing right now with hiring that fall into this concept of this talent shortage. One of them being that there's a significant turnover in that first 90 days. So when we hire somebody in any job, we know that there's likely going to be somebody leaving in the next 90 days of that job. And that's not true of every organization, but in general, that's what the studies are saying. And then along with that, if you look at executives, 40% of executives that are being hired at a senior level are being either pushed out, they fail, they quit, they move on within 90 days. So there's a constant churn of needing to replace and kind of reinvent talent within some of these organizations. And I don't know about you, Ron, but it feels like things need to shift from the past of how we go about looking for the next person to come within organizations. And I know we have done that at Southwest Michigan First, but how do you encourage other leaders to do something countercultural in some ways?
I think the first thing is, don't wait until you have an opening. So, you know, I'm amazed at the number of leaders who don't share in their get-tos. So as leaders, we all know there are two things. You have the things you get to do and the things you have to do. It's amazing how the have to do's were on your get-to list just a year before. But we take for granted the people that we're in meetings with and the decisions that we're exposed to, and that everyone understands that. Well, if we don't expose our teammates to those and let them see how the world works, what we refer to as behind the boardroom doors, then we're not giving them the opportunities they need to thrive. So the first thing you have to do is make a conscious decision to put people in opportunities that are beyond their capabilities. Doesn't mean you're throwing them in the deep end of the pool with bricks around their ankles. It means that you're with them, but and you're coaching them through. And a lot of times I'll sit down with people after the meeting and say, now what questions did you have? Well, let me explain to you why this went the way it went. So you're building leaders and developing them before you need it. It's the whole adage of, you know, put the roof on your house before it starts to rain. So if you're going to build these leaders internally, you got to give them the exposure. Second thing is, you've got to make sure that they understand the magnitude of decisions. So talking through that, if we decide A versus B, what the benefits and the costs are of both of those, because good leaders understand that. But I think you've also got to make sure that, and it's the hardest thing for a point leader to do. Now, let me grant this, everybody listening, this is the hard thing, but you have to not grant the ability, the permission to do something. You have to grant them the permission to try something and then be okay if it fails. Now, you have to coach through that and you have to have accountability to it, but talk about it. But the best way to learn to drive a car is in the driver's seat of the car. We can all take classes online and we can play video games, but until you actually step on the accelerator and feel the car lurch, you can't do it. You got to put people in the driver's seat. Now you're next to them. You're yelling, whoa. And if you're like, when I learned to drive, you know, the driver's instructor actually had a brake on his side that he could step on the brake, keep me from hitting the guardrails. But that's what we have to do with our people, is someday that we want them to drive our metaphorical bus.
I really love that. And I can personally say that I've appreciated sometimes a push out there to, you know what, it's time for you to come up with something new. And lots of times where later you said, I didn't think that that was going to work.
No, I mean, that absolutely. And it works. And you go, I got to admit, they're better than me or saw things that I didn't see because my mind is in the status quo. And we're all guilty of that. you know, I finish all my emails and letters and everything with the words always forward. Well, when people ask, and which happened this week, we were down in Atlanta working, somebody asked why, and it's because I want to remind myself to get out of the cul-de-sac. So you can be in the best neighborhood in the country, in a big, wide cul-de-sac with beautiful green lawns and lovely homes and children playing, and all the children are above average and all the spouses are beautiful. But yet you're putting hundreds of miles on your car, driving around a circle in that cul-de-sac. But at the end of the month, you didn't get anywhere. But we all, the status quo is like that cul-de-sac. So status quo isn't always bad. Sometimes it's beautiful, but we don't get anywhere. And just like a ship wasn't built to stay in the harbor, we as leaders aren't built to stay in the cul-de-sac. We're built to always move forward. That's why this podcast is called the Always Forward Leadership Podcast.
It's a great name. One of the fears that I think a lot of leaders have when you talk about our culture at Southwest Michigan First, one of the things that people come out and say is, well, I don't know if that would work in our organization because we tend to hire a lot of people who are really green at first, and they're going to get restless if they know that they can kind of create their own destiny or that there's lots of opportunities for growth. They're going to get restless. And every time there's a position open, they're going to feel like they're ready for that. And I always say, one, maybe they are. And two, there's ways to help train people and to help mentor and coach people as they start their career so that they better understand when they truly are ready. And how do you feel like we've navigated that at Southwest Michigan First?
So on, two occasions, I have had to leave the role I was in, the job I was in, to be able to get a promotion, to make more money, to have more impact and influence. I liked my job. I liked the people I worked with, but I needed to grow. And so I had to leave and move on. Our goal at Southwest Michigan First is to create a place so you don't have to do that. Because we're entrepreneurial, we'll just keep building and expanding to meet the talents and capacities of the people that we have here. We never want to lose somebody for that. So if you begin with that premise, and then you hire and select people based on their capacity for growth and the intensity of that capacity and their honesty and integrity, then like that quote or the data you had of, you know, you lose people in the first 90 days. We don't lose people in the first 90 days. And Eric, just this morning, we were reading the book Power of Moments this morning by the Heath brothers at our book club. And one of the things we said is, oh, we need to add a 90-day plan to onboarding of new employees so that they're getting exposed to every facet of the organization in real time. So everything going on, we're plugging them in. So because we know that ignorance is our enemy and it's not apathy. People want to do amazing things. So by understanding that you got to burden people with knowledge, by understanding that people are hardwired to thrive, the people we hire, if we're using a racehorse mentality, we're hiring all thoroughbreds. And so if we hire a thoroughbred and then we say, oh yeah, but you're the new kid, so we really need you to plow the field for a while we go run, they're going to leave. If we put them on the track and they outrun all the other horses, that's what a champion looks like. That's not a problem. That's not an outlier to be culled. You know, the Australians have a term called the rule of the tall poppy. And so the whole idea is that any flower, a poppy flower, that gets taller than the other poppy flowers, they cut down because they want everything to be uniform and everybody to be the same, all the flowers to be the same. Well, that doesn't work in our culture and doesn't work in our organization. We want everybody to flower and blossom when it's their time. Because we also know that fall and winter come for people. And if you're doing real well as an organization, somebody's blossoming at the same time somebody else is resting. Or in your case, you know,
having twins.
Blossoming while you're having twins. But it did not faze us. I can only find one mistake we made. Maybe you're finding them, but we made while you were gone because you so prepared the soil for us to thrive. But then we had champions that just stepped up and ran. And, you know, two people, Nick and Cynthia, went far above what either you and I had both projected for both of them. absolutely did better, I think, than if you'd on a couple of areas than if you'd have been there.
Absolutely. I mean, they blew it out of the park. And I really don't think we'd be at the place that we are with our work plan if I had been here, which is a true testament to them. I mean, we should have let them run a lot faster early on.
That's what inboarding looks like, where you give people an opportunity and you don't say, well, you can try this, but don't go any farther than I would go. That's what failure looks like. That's what death and decline looks like. That's the status quo.
Yes. And in the talent shortage, as we've been talking about, I know this was a topic that was just near and dear to your heart because we're all struggling with helping companies to find talent, replace talent, retain talent. And so just a few last words from you on the listening audience about why this is so relevant today and what you encourage people in positions that have the ability to make decisions like inboarding versus just looking from outside of their company walls. What is your parting words for them?
So Andy Grove, who was the kind of guru president of Intel, who took them to the next level. Andy Grove was running Intel when they were in the memory business, and they were getting devastated by Chinese products that were better and much cheaper. So he sat down with his chairman of his board, Gordon, and they were talking about, well, what are we going to do? And so Andy Grove says to his chairman, says, all right, when the board fires us, what's the first thing our successors are going to do? And why are we waiting? So let me ask you, if key members of your team left tomorrow, who would you empower to take those responsibilities? Because you can't just go hire somebody. It's a tough time to hire anybody. And in our process, it takes months to bring somebody into the team. So if key members left, if they got hit by a bus, if they quit you, if they just got mono and they're out, who would you empower to take those roles? And why are you waiting to give them those responsibilities? If you can change that mindset to say, we don't have to wait to pour into people. Will it always be perfect? No. Will it be better than it is? Will a month or now it be better than it is today? I can almost guarantee it will be. If you hired the right people, it absolutely will be. It also eliminates the bias of gender, because we have a lot of male leaders with, you know, pretty little ladies behind them that they think, oh, well, I can't give them that because of this thing in their life. If you just say, here's the opportunity, run with it, takes away that bias. It takes away the bias of the right school. It takes away all those bias and just says talent is our number one asset. And if you can believe that and act on it, watch how your company thrives. Watch how your church thrives. Watch how your not-for-profit thrives. Watch the peace that you gain in your life by seeing amazing people work in their strengths. It's what it's all about. We can look the next 25 years with our population growth in America. This is the future. The future's not more babies. It's not more people coming into your company from the outside, thousands of applicants for each job. You've got to grow and develop people.
That's a powerful exercise to end with, just asking yourself the question of who would be next for those key leadership positions or any position within your organization, really. And so thank you for that really practical step that the listening audience can take. We'll see you next time on the Always Forward Leadership Podcast.
See you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.